You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
We could talk about Donald Trump at the top of every show, every week. I actually have nightmares about that, talking about Donald Trump every Tuesday morning until 2020, or God fucking forbid, 2024. But believe it or not, Donald Trump isn't the only asshole who holds elected office in the United States right now. There's a lot of asshole action at the federal level, of course, with Republicans in control of both houses of Congress. We could talk about those assholes, the asshole congressional Republicans, the ones coming to take your health care away. But I wanted to talk about assholes who are a little closer to home. Let's talk about Republicans in state government. What's going on at the state level? Quite a lot. Republicans control a record number of legislatures, state legislatures. We can't possibly cover every outrage. We don't have the time. The internet does not have the room. So let's take one issue, abortion, and quickly run through some highlights or lowlights brought to us by Republican lowlifes. In Virginia, State Delegate Ben Klein introduced HB 2264, which would defund Planned Parenthood in Virginia, because with abortion rates at their lowest level since abortion was declared a constitutional right, now is the time to kneecap Planned Parenthood, where millions of American women get birth control, and of course, to repeal Obamacare. The Affordable Care Act made contraception more widely available, and Ben Klein is a good Republican soldier, and he wants to see Obamacare, the ACA, repealed. It's a neat trick. Run for office as an abortion opponent. Once you're in office, drive the abortion rate up. Then, when you're running for re-election, decry those rising abortion rates that you helped create. Because for assholes like Ben, it's not about protecting the babies. It's about power. Power and, of course, punishing and controlling women. In Florida, State Rep. Aaron Grawl introduced Florida HB 19, which would allow women to sue doctors for terminating their pregnancies. We've all heard stories from abortion providers about seeing patients in their clinic that they've seen in the anti-choice picket lines outside their clinic. This would allow those conflicted women to have their abortions and their moral superiority too. Get the abortion you need, sue the doctor to absolve yourself of the guilt you feel later. In Oklahoma, State Rep. Justin Humphreys, HB 1441, would require a pregnant woman to provide the identity of the father in writing to her abortion provider before undergoing the procedure, and require her to get the father of the fetus's permission before terminating the pregnancy. Handing one-night stands, vengeful ex-boyfriends, and abusive spouses a veto power over a woman's right to make decisions about her own body? Yeah, what could possibly go wrong with that? In Arkansas, State Rep. Andy Mayberry, yes, that's right, Mayberry, introduced the Arkansas Unborn Child Protection from Dismemberment Abortion Act in December, which would make second trimester abortions a Class D felony. Those second trimester abortions are the safest and most commonly performed form of abortion. So after arguing for the last decade that they had to harass abortion clinics with TRAP laws, that's targeted regulation of abortion providers, that required hospital admission privileges and full surgical facilities for an outpatient procedure on site in order to quote unquote protect women, anti-choicers are now moving, at least the ones named Mayberry, to make abortion itself more dangerous for women. I was going to make a point here, but Jennifer Lawless, co-author of It Still Takes a Candidate, Why Women Don't Run for Office, and most recently, co-author of Running from Office, Why Young Americans Are Turned Off to Politics, made the point better than I could on a recent episode of the wonderfully informative, wonderfully wonky Ezra Klein Show, a deep dive podcast from Vox that features really fascinating long-form interviews with news and policymakers. Quickly, Lawless herself, she ran for office, federal office, ran for Congress in 2006, and had to raise a ton of money to do it. Local and statewide races require a lot less campaign cash and a lot less soul-killing fundraising. But Ezra points out that people just aren't as inspired to run for those offices. And then he puts this question to Lawless.
Make the case on why people listening should run for offices, should open up a book and find out what offices they can run for near them that are not national politics.
Two big reasons. The first is, over the course of the last 20 years or so, we've really seen federalism take hold, where at the state and local level, so many decisions are being made, and the notion of small government at the national level is giving more and more opportunities for state and local governments to play an active role. So when we think about overturning Roe versus Wade, for example, what that's going to mean if the Trump administration manages to appoint two Supreme Court nominees and the Senate confirms them, if Roe versus Wade is overturned, all abortion-related decisions will be made at the state level. At the state level right now, more than 30 states have on the books laws that are currently unconstitutional because they restrict a woman's right to choose beyond what the Supreme Court has said is okay. All of those laws go into effect when Roe v. Wade is overturned. So if you care about those kinds of issues, the state level is the place to be over the course of at least the next 4 years.
The left in the United States, as we've recently demonstrated to great effect, is really good at marching. And marching, it does make a difference. It can make a difference. It has, as we've seen over the last few weeks, really made a difference. We're also good at spelling. Unlike the Tea Party, the signs at the Women's March and the protests at the airports were embarrassing typo-free. And we're also really good at knitting, as it turns out, all those hats on a deadline. But you know what? We have to get better at running at the state level, because like Lawless says, that is where the action is. So, care about protecting a woman's right to choose? March. For sure, march. But don't just march. Run. Run for office. Okay, coming up today on the Micro Free Edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your challenging Qs, lots of my hopefully insightful A's, and maybe an easy D or two. And on the subscription Magnum Edition of the Savage Lovecast, Adam Safran joins us from Northwestern University for a What You Got on the Neurology of the Female Orgasm. Subscribe to the Magnum Edition of the Lovecast at savagelovecast.com. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by adamandeve.com. Get 50% off one item and free shipping when you enter the offer code SAVAGE at checkout. Today's episode is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron delivers all fresh, high-quality ingredients and recipes you need to create delicious home-cooked meals. Get your first three meals for free by going to blueapron.com/savage. The Savage Lovecast is sponsored by Babeland, a woman-owned sex toy retailer. You can shop Babeland boutiques in Seattle and New York, brick and mortar, or you can find them online at babeland.com. Right now, get 15% off in stores or from babeland.com with code SAVAGE at checkout.
Hi, Dan. I'm a single female, straight, 22 years old, and I'm from Canada. So my friend recently got into a really big breakup and had sort of this rebound with a guy who... he was really great, evidently a really great lover, but in the end, she contracted genital herpes from him. I was there with her through the whole process, and she was really upset about it. She had no idea, and you know, she had a really hard time because of it, and you know, moved on and is now dating someone else. And well, a friend from another circle is now dating the same guy, and they're keeping their relationship under wraps because of the other friend. They don't want to be inconsiderate to her. I don't really know what to do. I feel like I watched what happened to my first friend and how horrible it was for her, and how she didn't know about this, and he obviously wasn't telling her at any point. They'd been together for, I guess, a few months, and now this new friend is with this guy and the same guy, and I just feel like I have no place to tell her, but I still feel like, how can I not after seeing what happened to my first friend? So I'm wondering if you have any advice. What should I do? Should I just keep my mouth shut? And how am I going to deal with it if she goes through the same traumatic experience later because I didn't tell her what I know?
According to the most recent data that I could find, and I'm quoting here from a news article at CTV News, as many as 1 in 7 Canadians aged 14 to 59 may be infected with herpes simplex type 2 virus, and more than 90% of them may be unaware of their status, a new study suggests. So 1 in 7, and 90% of that 1 in 7 don't know that they have herpes. I'm curious what this guy said to your friend when she became symptomatic, when she went to the doctor, when she discovered that she had herpes. Did he know that he had herpes? Did he knowingly expose her to herpes? Were they not using protection? Or was he unaware that he had herpes? It's also possible that your friend had herpes, that she was one of the 90% who have it and don't know that they have it and only became symptomatic, coincidentally, during the couple of months she spent with this guy, with something that is so common and in most people, not that big a deal. Most people don't show symptoms or have one outbreak and never have another outbreak. It's really hard to assign blame with any certainty. It could have been him. She could have been exposed in a previous relationship. She could have been exposed 10 years ago, and then her immune system took a dip during this relationship, and she became symptomatic. She had an outbreak. Maybe it was her second outbreak, and her first outbreak was so minor that she didn't even notice it, which is also something that happens with herpes. Seems to me that when 1 in 7 people have something that can be passed through skin-to-skin contact, you go into each new relationship where you're rubbing your skins together, either aware that herpes or HPV are known knowns, are risks you're running, are things that you are statistically likely to be exposed to and likely then to potentially acquire, or you go into those relationships unaware of those known knowns, you go into them in ignorance, and how then do you assign blame? I think you should keep out of it. I think you should speak to all of your friends about using condoms, about safety, about what they can do to protect themselves rather than run to this one girl and tell her that she's dating the herpes monster, because you don't know that and you can't know that. And that would be unfair to him and an insult to the intelligence potentially of your friend, who may know that this is a risk that she is running. This is a risk that she has shouldered, that she assumes as she dates around or sleeps around or whatever the fuck she's doing. She gets out there and dates and mates in hopes of finding a long-term partner, that you're playing the odds with these easily transmitted, in most cases, no big deal, sexually transmitted infections. So yeah, unless when it all came out that your friend had herpes, this guy jumped up, twirled his mustache and said, aha, I know that you have herpes. I gave you herpes. I had herpes and I had an outbreak and I wasn't telling you because I don't care about you or your safety. I'm glad you have herpes. Unless he did that, you really can't point the finger at him and it would be unfair to him. But if you're concerned about your friend who happens to be dating him, have a general conversation with her about the steps she can take to protect herself from this and other sexually transmitted infections, with the caveat that condoms help. But when it comes to skin-to-skin contact, when it comes to HPV, when it comes to herpes, condoms only provide some protection, not nearly as much protection as they provide for HIV or against HIV, against syphilis, against gonorrhea, but they do provide some protection.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 30-year-old gay male in a committed relationship, a monogamous relationship, and lately I've really been struggling with my sexual desires and wanting to have sex. My sex in my relationship is amazing, and I'm not sure what it is, but I just have this desire to be with other guys, sexually, just to fool around. I have jealousy issues that I know I need to deal with, and I don't want to have an open relationship, and I've just really internally been struggling with going online and looking and nearly hooking up, but then not hooking up, and then this morning I just went and jacked off with a guy in a park, and I'm just like filled with this insane amount of guilt, and I know I can never tell my partner because he'll leave me and that'll be the end of that, even though it's the right thing to do, and I'm sure that's what you would tell me to do. But I'm just wondering if you have any advice for how I can deal with my sexual, I don't know if it's an addiction or just a compulsion, where I'm constantly thinking about sex and I'll sit there on my phone for hours and just be looking at the possibility of hooking up, and I'll even to the point of kind of ghosting people because I start feeling guilty of cheating. And then, but today I did what I did, and now I can't take it back, and that's, I just have to live with that. I don't know if I should talk to a psychiatrist or my regular doctor, or I don't know. And the thing that kills me is my partner's amazing, the sex is amazing, so I feel like a piece of shit of a human being. I need help processing all this. I don't know what else to do. And I know I probably sound crazy and you're shaking your head and probably going to tell me I'm doing everything wrong and I'm a bad person and all that. I don't know. I just would really love some advice.
Let's zoom out for just a second and think about sex. Sex is older, stronger, and wiser than we are. Sex, natural selection, spontaneous mutation. Sex built us. Sex will unbuild us. Sex is building whatever it is that's going to come after us after we fuck the planet up to such an extent that we can't live here anymore. Sex is already at work. Evolution is already at work through the mechanism of sex, creating the next dominant species for this planet. Might be cockroaches. Maybe they'll be orange. And yet we talk about sex when we talk about our own sex lives, as if we're in charge of it, as if sex takes our orders, when really the opposite is true. We take orders from sex. We are constantly in a position of having to negotiate our surrender to sex. And when you are negotiating your surrender to sex, you can make demands. You can itemize what it is that you would like from sex. But really, you have to figure out a way to incorporate into your life in a healthy way the shit that sex wants from you and the sex that you want, because you're going to get it in the end. Sex is going to get it in the end. Sex is going to have what sex wants, and it's going to drag you by the junk in many cases along for the ride. Look at all the high profile anti-gay closet cases who ultimately get outed because they take a rent boy to Europe to quote unquote lift their luggage. Google George Reekers, hugely famous anti-gay homophobe, founder of an anti-gay, ex-gay organization, gets caught carting a really cute twink prostitute around Europe. Sex won. Sex beat George Reekers in the end. Sex beats all sorts of straight people too in the end. And sex just beat you, caller. You want the guy you've got, the commitment that you've got, the great sex, the great partner. You also want extramarital or extra boyfriendal, whatever it is right now. You want more. You want these outside encounters. You want more sexually than you can get just in this ostensibly monogamous relationship. So what do? Well, you can lie and cheat and run around, which is currently what you're doing. You can let the pressure build and build and build rather than having an honest conversation with your partner until you impulsively go off and do something, then you feel terrible and guilty about, as you have done and now do feel terrible and guilty about. Or you can negotiate the terms of your surrender. You can go to your partner and say, I want to be with you and the sex is awesome and amazing and I love our relationship, but I struggle with these desires. Do you struggle with these desires too? That's a good way to start that conversation. Sometimes find myself thinking about other guys. Sometimes find myself looking at apps. How do we accommodate or incorporate these desires for others that I'm experiencing into our relationship? Or are they just not allowed? Is this just a no-go? You need to have that conversation with your partner. You're a gay man in a gay relationship. Most gay men regard a monogamous commitment as an opt-in, not a default setting. Maybe you guys had that conversation and you opted in to a monogamous commitment. But if you, a la straight people, if you just blew into it as if monogamy was your default setting and the primary and definitional default setting of all committed relationships, you need to walk that back. You need to have a conversation about that, because clearly that is not going to work for you. And sooner or later, you're going to impulsively reach out and do something that destroys the relationship that you're in. So what do you do now? You said that you probably ought to tell your partner that telling your partner was the right thing to do, and that I was going to tell you to run and tell your partner to confess. I am not going to tell you to do that. I tell people to do the opposite of that all the time. If this was a one-off, if this was a tiptoe up to the abyss and then a bungee jump into the abyss and then back out of the abyss, and it's lesson learned and you're never going to do this again, you don't have to tell your partner about it. Sometimes it's the more loving thing to do, to not tell your partner about it. If indeed you're going to recommit to monogamy and this isn't a mistake that you're ever going to make ever again. But I don't think that's the case here. I think this is a mistake that you will make again, because you want this guy, you want the great sex, you want the committed relationship, and you want some sexual adventures too. You can have sexual adventures with your partner. Perhaps you could have sexual adventures, if they were jail, only with your partner's consent, joyful consent, maybe with his active participation as well. or you can have the occasional sexual adventure with your partner's forbearance if he's not so into it. But that's the price of admission that he has to pay to be with you, is you're going to sneak off to the woods every once in a while, jack off with a stranger. Maybe he could live with that. But you need to have a conversation, not with me. I can't give you absolution, and I'm not going to order you to tell him the truth. You need to have a conversation with your partner about your feelings. You need to stop hiding your sexuality from your partner, because sex is going to out you, because sex is more powerful than you. Sex is in charge. You need to negotiate the terms of your surrender. And that's something you need to do with your partner. You don't necessarily have to go to him and say, this happened, therefore we need to have a conversation about whether this can happen again. You can go to him and say, I'm a little obsessed right now. I keep thinking about X, Y, and Z. Where are you? What are you thinking about? The sex in our relationship is great. I love it. But I'm sometimes tempted, seriously tempted. You must be tempted too at times. Remember, and you can say this to your partner, monogamy, a monogamous commitment, does not mean you don't want to fuck other people or think about fucking other people or fantasize about fucking other people or just fucking around with other people. It means you refrain from doing those things. You're still gonna wanna. So go into that conversation with your partner confident that he still thinks about other people too sometimes, that he still wants to fuck around perhaps with other people sometimes. Ideally, an accommodation can be made that allows both of you to be who you are. Or you incorporate that energy, that desire for others, into your monogamous relationship. Some gay couples define monogamy as, we only have sex with each other, and sometimes we have threesomes. That's a definition of monogamy that you often hear gay men cite. Maybe that can work for you, but you need to start having an honest conversation with your partner about your mutual terms of surrender in your relationship with sex, which is in charge. I'd also recommend that you pick up this book that I'm reading that you actually can't pick up right now because it is not yet published, but I am reading an advanced copy, Esther Perel's new book, State of Affairs. There are chapters in it about why people who are happy in their relationships, who are satisfied, not just with their partners, but with their sex lives with their partners, who love their partners very much, why those people cheat at times. You are happy, you are satisfied, the sex is great, you love your partner, you cheated. Why? Did you need to assert your autonomy? Did you need to feel young again? Did you need to feel desirable again? What is it? There's something about going out there and cheating that doesn't always mean there's something wrong with the relationships. We pretend that if we can just set all the dials and knobs correctly, that a relationship can be infidelity proofed, that it be rendered immune to desire for others, immune to cheating. And that's just not true. Sometimes people in great relationships will cheat for their own reasons. I'm not sure what your reasons are. You need to think about what your reasons are, because that's part of what you need to talk to your partner about when you have that conversation about monogamy, opt-in or default setting, and you have that conversation about wanting to fuck other people and whether you have to pretend that's not true. And if you can both allow for that, that of course you desire other people, are you ever allowed to act on those desires and under what circumstances? You need to have a much bigger conversation with your partner, and you need to stop beating yourself up about this jack-off session in the woods. You can make this Valentine's Day one that you'll never forget and one that they'll never forget with this amazing offer from adamandeve.com. Through Valentine's Day, you will receive 50% off just about any item. Just go to adamandeve.com and you will find over 18,000 adult entertainment products, including toys, lingerie, and a seemingly endless selection of adult DVDs. And there's more. They will also throw in free shipping on your entire order. So check out adamandeve.com today for this special Valentine's offer. Get 50% off one item and free shipping when you enter the offer code SAVAGE at checkout. SAVAGE, that's SAVAGE at checkout at adamandeve.com.
Hi, single, straight, pregnant woman in the Northeast, although maybe not for long. So what happened is that twice during my pregnancy, my boyfriend got into my personal messages and read through them without my knowledge. And he then, using the information he read, he didn't find anything directly, but then he plied me with questions until he could catch me saying something that pinged wrong as a lie to him based on what I'd wrote. And he's done this twice. And both times the lies were, at least in my opinion, things that had changed since he'd read them. And the second time this happened, I thought he had accessed my stuff remotely because it happened while I was out of state. And I freaked out and went crazy and went through all the security measures. I deactivated Facebook, which is a big deal for me. I confronted him like saying, this is abuse. Like, you can't do this. You can't keep spying on me. And he's like, no, I don't trust you. I'm going to keep spying on you. I don't know what I can do. Like, I'm freaking out. It's literally a crime to do this, I think. And he says he's going to keep doing it to me. And I'm like, I think I'm out. Like, I can't do this. And so now here I am, pregnant and freaking out because I think I made a mistake. Like, I should do whatever I can to keep this guy in my life, even if it means putting up with stuff like that and like the hopes that stuff will change.
Sometimes abusers lay their cards on the table early in the relationship. The red flags are there and apparent. Sometimes we don't see them early in a relationship because we're besotted, because we are in the infatuation stage, the cliche love is blind stage. And our friends stand around slack-jawed going, holy shit. And if our friends are really our friends, they pull us aside and say, look at this, look at this, look at this. Bad signs, red flags, likely to escalate over time. Perhaps a move to isolate you, perhaps belittling and abusive and disparaging comments and language. Perhaps a move to isolate you from your friends. Jealousy about former partners that you're still on friendly terms with. Monitoring your online presence. Bad signs, red flags. It is no character flaw to have dated someone who is on the abuser spectrum, right? I've dated people who were abusive. Anybody can. And best case scenario, you're with somebody who's abusive. The infatuation burns off like the fog and you can see it and your friends are there elbowing you in the side saying, look, 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 look at this. Oh my God. Oh my God. And you go. Not every abuser is good enough to lay their cards on the table early. Not every abuser starts waving those red flags around while it's still relatively easy for you to extricate yourself from the relationship. Some abusers lay in wait. Some abusers wait until you are emotionally or financially dependent on them in a way that makes you leaving feel impossible. And some abusers wait until you've scrambled your DNA together. Some abusers wait until you are pregnant or until you have a child or two or three to lay those cards on the table and reveal themselves for who they are and to inform you about their intentions toward you going forward, which is to use you as a punching bag now that you are trapped. Sometimes a literal punching bag, sometimes a figurative punching bag. Your soon-to-be ex, whatever the fuck he is now, boyfriend or husband, he waited until you were stuck or he believed you to be stuck. He waited until you were pregnant to start digging through your social media, to start accusing you of lying, to start gaslighting you with this bullshit. And now you have to go. Father of this kid, not father of this kid, you got to go. You have to end this. He has informed you that he's not going to stop and that this is only going to get worse. I'm here to tell you that this will only get worse over time. You said, I should do or I need to do whatever I can to keep this guy in my life because of this baby. That's what he's counting on. That is what he is counting on, that you will feel that way, that you are stuck, you are trapped, and that you have to do whatever you can to keep him in your life for this kid. And that gives him license to not stop, to continue to invade your privacy, continue to break the law, potentially, depending on where you live, and to ramp it up over time, to get worse. And I'm sorry, maybe I'm jaded, maybe I'm cynical, maybe I've gotten questions like this for too long, but it will only get worse if you stay. If he sees that he can get away with beating you up like this, terrorizing you like this, and that you will stay, that opens the floodgates. In his mind, that gives him permission to be his worst self, to continue to lay abuser cards on the table in the expectation that you will sacrifice yourself and your sanity on the altar of parenting with this guy, of living with this guy? No, 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 no. You have to go. Get yourself a lawyer. Start thinking about paternity issues, about child support. gather your friends, call your family, tell them about the situation you're in, ask them to come through for you. Now is the time that you need them to come through for you and be there for you and help you get out of this relationship and get on your feet and be there for you throughout the rest of this pregnancy, because you're going to have to do this on your own. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. And thank goodness, because we use it a lot at our house. Cooking together builds strong family bonds. They say that Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often. And those of you out there who spend a lot in restaurants or at high-end grocery chains can now spend under $10 per person through Blue Apron to create a delicious meal. Here are a couple of meals on offer this week. Cashew chicken stir fry with tango mandarin and jasmine rice, and udon noodle soup with miso and soft boiled eggs. Their meals are so delicious, you are going to love them. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/savage. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/savage. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hi, Dan. So I'm a 22-year-old gay man living in Vermont, currently in a relationship with two older men. They are currently married to each other, but we've been together for a while, and we want to go through a wedding ceremony with the three of us. Obviously, it wouldn't be legally binding or anything like that, but we have people telling us that it's something we shouldn't do, even though it's something we all believe in and want. Believe in meaning that it's something we should be able to do. We believe that we're going to be together for quite a while, if not forever. I'm just wanting to know your opinion on the matter, I suppose.
I have no beef with the triad gay relationship. I have no beef, no qualms about this proposed wedding ceremony of you marrying symbolically. Lots of same-sex couples had symbolic-only marriages before even civil unions or domestic partnerships came along because it was emotionally significant to them. Yeah, so a throuple that wants to have a ceremony that is about the emotional significance of it, not the legal incidence of it because they don't exist yet. Absolutely, I support that throuple's choice to do that. I have a beef with just one thing, though. You're 22 years old. That's too young to get married to anybody, much less too young to get married to two somebodies. That you feel now that you'd like to spend the rest of your life with these guys, honor that feeling by getting engaged and staying engaged for, I don't know, five-ish years. Wait until you get into your mid-late 20s before you have a great big public ceremony. 22 is too young to marry. In my opinion, I would be giving you this advice if you were a straight guy calling about getting married to one woman that you were in love with at 22. I would be giving you this advice if you were a lesbian calling about getting married to the lesbian girlfriend or the lesbian couple at 22. And I'm giving you this advice in this circumstance. As for the people who don't want you to do it, you don't have to invite those people to the ceremony or to the wedding. Invite people who love and support you three as a throuple, you three as the awesome tri-dict unit you are, but you're just 22. So please, don't book the hall, don't order the cake until 2022. The Savage Lovecast is sponsored by Babeland, a woman-owned sex toy retailer. Babeland welcomes people of all orientations, genders, and experience levels. They provide a fun shopping environment and carry a variety of sex toys, all quality tested and user-reviewed. Babeland is more than a place to buy sex toys. They are committed to creating a more passionate world through education as well. Their popular workshop program is designed to enhance your sex life through frank, open, and humorous discussions about sex. If you're in New York or Seattle, take advantage of this unique opportunity to learn from Babeland sex educators by heading to their locations, their brick-and-mortar locations in New York and Seattle. You can shop Babeland boutiques, again, in Seattle and New York, or find them online at babeland.com. Right now, exclusively for Savage Lovecast listeners, Babeland is offering 15% off in stores and from babeland.com. Simply use the code SAVAGE at checkout.
Hi, Dan, and the Tech Savvy at Risk Youth. I am a 22-year-old female living in the Midwest. Recently found out about a month ago that I'm pregnant. However, my period's never been super regular, so tracking when my last menstrual period was and how far along I was has been difficult. The first time I got an estimate, they told me I was probably about 6 weeks along, and then I was scheduled for an ultrasound. And when I got the ultrasound, they told me I was actually further along than I thought, and I was, you know, 3 weeks further along than I was thinking originally. I have a partner that I'm exclusive with now. However, we haven't been exclusive for a long time, and we've been fucking and seeing each other for quite a while, but also seeing other people for a while. And I told him when I found out I was pregnant and thought I was 6 weeks along that I was pregnant, and it was his because that was the only person I was with at that time. However, being 3 weeks further along puts someone else into the picture. And it's about a month before I expected that I was pregnant. And so I had fucked another guy. We used condoms, and I'm not really sure if I have to bring this up. However, I feel like I really, really want to, just to be honest and open about it in case by some weird chance, like, it's not his kid. So I want to bring it up. I'm trying to figure out the best way to bring it up without kind of making him resent me in any way, because we're in a relationship now, and he's thinking it's his kid, and I really love where we're at with things, and I don't want to ruin it. However, I want to be open and honest and share that with him.
Usually when people say, help me tell someone this thing that's likely to upset them, help me game this out, they want me to give them language that's going to make this thing that's potentially explosive as hell and unwelcome not explosive and welcome. And there's no way to do that. There's no gloss you can put on this. There's no sugarcoating this. You just have to go to him and say, I just found out that I'm 3 weeks further along than I originally thought I was, and the odds that you are the father, biologically, genetically, the father of this kid are much lower than previously believed. In fact, I believe X guy to be the father, biologically, genetically, not you. And then he gets to make a choice. He gets to make a decision about what he wants to do going forward. Does he want to parent with you this child? Does he want to be the father of a child that he's not genetically related to? As someone who is not genetically related to the child that I am the father of, that is a thing that men will do. That is a thing that men can choose to do. And some men unknowingly, under 1% of men unknowingly, are raising kids that are not genetically related to them. They believe themselves to be the biological fathers of, but they are not. So not telling him, that's an option. It's not an option I endorse, but obviously the data, the statistics tell us that it is an option that other women have selected. If he stays, you can parent together. If he decides to go, that he can't do this, then you have decisions to make around reaching out to the other guy, around whether you're going to ding him for child support. You have a decision to make around whether you want to continue to carry this pregnancy to term. You can avail yourself of the right to terminate this pregnancy if all the things you now know change how you feel about becoming a mother at this moment with this person, this other person, not the person you expected that you would parent with. It's a dicey situation. It's on him, though. You can't decide what you're going to do until you know how he feels and what he wants to do. And again, there is no way to put a ribbon on this and make it a pretty package. You just got to go dump it on him and then see where you are.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling because I'm really conflicted. Two friends of mine, both amazing women, have been abused by a member of our BDSM community. You know, the first time it happened, he was living with a friend, and then he like flipped out sort of out of nowhere. And so she kicked him out, which was good. I'm so glad that she was strong enough to do that. And she warned a couple of the people that he had been playing with at the time that he kind of went a little crazy. A friend of ours, former partner, sort of thought that maybe, you know, he'd go through therapy and he was sort of still around and hanging out with her. And he did go to therapy. And then later, like a shitbag, like all abuser shitbags, he like proclaimed that he was cured, right? But obviously he wasn't, because a month or two later, he flipped his shit on her too. And I feel awful for both of them because I love them both so much. But on the other hand, my second friend doesn't really want to tell people in the community that this happened, even though he's sort of a name. And it really hurts me because there's a lot of people who might not know what he's capable of or that he does this. And it sort of puts a lot of other people in the community at risk. But it also sort of puts her at risk for being outed and other things. The community in this area is sort of a bit fucked up. So sometimes, you know, every couple of months, there's sort of like a big blow up about somebody who has violated consent or, you know, turned out to be a crazy sort of narcissistic liar or just like a really shitty human being who's sort of a rapist. And it's really concerning because a lot of people know these things ahead of time, but don't say anything until it hits, you know, the point where people aren't willing to sort of take that anymore. And I'm really wondering whether there's a way to fix the culture around that. I think it's a lot of like celebrity worship, you know, the next big cool edge player kind of thing. But I don't really know how to out that sort of secretly toxic masculinity situation.
Why have a BDSM quote-unquote community? Why have FetLife? Why have Munches and Mixers? Why have friends listed on sites like FetLife, on sites like Recon? The idea is to create a feedback loop that provides accountability. The idea is that people into BDSM, particularly subs, are going to make themselves vulnerable to someone, give someone power over them, and they need some assurance, some way of gaining assurance that this person to whom they are making themselves vulnerable, this person who they are temporarily ceding their power to or giving power over them, is safe, is sane, is not going to violate their consent. So the whole idea behind having a BDSM community, behind having online communities, is to facilitate exactly what you are talking about here, is to facilitate feedback. And that feedback is about reputation. And someone can get a terrible reputation. And someone who violates consent, someone who's a shitty liar, someone who blows up, someone who is poisoned with toxic masculinity, kind of deserves a shitty reputation. Problem is, what do you do when that person is big and powerful and whatever community or scene that you're talking about, and taking that person on could win you enemies? Well, you got to take the risk. You got to share the information that you have on hand. You say this person has blown up. You didn't make it clear whether that person blew up in the context of a BDSM scene where that person losing their shit is potentially really dangerous and harmful. People sometimes blow up. People sometimes have meltdowns. Someone that you grant power temporarily over you, someone who you allow to tie you up and to do things to you that are potentially harmful or dangerous if done incorrectly, that person blowing up in a scene, much more problematic, much more consequential, much more worrying. That person blowing up or having a meltdown outside a scene might make you hesitate to give that person power over you temporarily in a scene, lest they have that meltdown in a scene, blow up at you in a scene. And I think that's something that people need to take into account when they're deciding to whom they will make themselves vulnerable. So I would, if I were in your shoes, risk speaking up about this person. There are two sides to every story. It doesn't sound like I think this guy could mount a convincing defense based on what little you've shared with me, but there are two sides to every story, and people whose reputations have been damaged by, and rightfully so, damaged or dinged by accounts of bad actions, particularly in a BDSM context, they can make amends. They can get to work on themselves. They can even defend themselves from those charges if they feel they are baseless. And then people can make up their own minds about whether they want to play with that person. But I endorse speaking up and speaking out about a situation and a circumstance and a player like this, because accountability to help create safety is the whole idea, the animating idea behind having a BDSM community in the first place. Finally, there is no fixing the culture, sadly. There is just mitigating for and controlling around the presence of deeply shitty people who exist everywhere and in every culture.
Hi, Dan. I was and still am a Hillary supporter. My neighbor loves Trump and has Trump signs, a big Trump flag, and he even built a wooden jail and put a life-size Hillary dummy in it. Every time he'd up his game with something new, I would put a new Hillary sign up or a flag. We never talked about it. It was a completely unspoken battle. Our houses are very close to each other, so it's hard to ignore each other's display. I still have some of my Hillary signs up. If I have to look at his crap, I want him to have to look at mine. Should I take my signs down or leave them up forever because I don't have a reason to take them down? If I do take them down, I feel like he won the battle.
He won. Your neighbor won because Donald Trump, by a trick of our racist electoral college, won the election, even though he lost the popular vote by nearly 3 million votes. Your neighbor kind of won this one. I think you should take your Hillary gear down. If there's anything you want to leave up in your yard, perhaps you get a scorecard and you put on that Donald Trump's approval ratings, which as he was being sworn in, were historically the lowest approval ratings ever measured for an incoming president. And I can't imagine that with the chaos that we've seen thus far, the chaos, the conflicts of interests, the scandals thus far, more scandals in just a few weeks than Barack Obama had in his entire 8-year administration. Can't imagine that number is ever going to be in the positive territory. So if you want to leave one thing in your yard, don't make it Hillary Clinton. Make it Donald Trump's abysmal and worsening approval ratings.
Hi, I'm calling in response to the gentleman who asked if, since twins ran in his family, if there are people who would pay more for sperm from him. The answer is no, because, sorry to say it, dude, but your sperm has nothing to do with the production of twins. The conception of twins happens in the uterus, so it has to do with conditions there, either how many eggs are released or whether a zygote splits, producing identical twins, which is much rarer. And yeah, no, the amount of sperm has nothing to do with it. Sorry, dude.
Hi, I'm calling in response to the burlesque dancer in episode 537. Dan was right on the money, but I wanted to highlight one thing. You said you still feel drawn to your controlling ex. Of course you do. When you're in an abusive relationship, the good moments provide relief so strong that it feels like happiness. It feels like love, but it isn't. It's just another tactic to keep you under control. You can't fix him or the relationship. So arm yourself with that knowledge and plan things to do when you feel like you miss him. When he contacts you, don't respond. There is tremendous power in silence. He'll get bored and move on to someone he can victimize more easily. Every time you make contact, you delay your own healing. I say all of this from experience. So stay strong, keep dancing, and keep making music.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling in response to the caller from episode 537 talking about how women should be more vocal about their abortions. And I've been having this thought recently that men should also be more vocal about the abortions that they've had. I personally haven't had one, but friends of mine that I've been in close contact with have gone through abortions with their partners, and it has just as much of an effect on the men as it does on the women, both positively and of the like emotional repercussions that they feel in deciding to have that abortion, and then how they feel about it afterwards and how it's affected their lives. And I do feel like these issues are just as much relevant to any man who likes having sex with women who are fertile, that these are reproductive rights that we're all fighting for. And any man who's on Tinder who's having sex with women should be standing and marching with us and fighting for our rights to have abortions, because they get to have that abortion as well.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Want to hear me rant at greater length about politics? Check out the Strangers Blabbermouth podcast, where I rant every week with host Eli Sanders and millennial crybaby Rich Smith. Want to see my amateur porn film festival? Go to humpfilmfest.com to find out when Hump is coming to you in your town. Be sure to read my weekly column, Savage Love, in newspapers all over the country, including the Portland Mercury. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Adam Safran on Twitter at @AdamSafran. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.